Where the mandibular condyle should ideally be positioned in the temporomandibular fossa has long been a subject of controversy in both dentistry and orthodontics. The development of computed tomography scans has provided researchers an excellent tool to more accurately evaluate 3D anatomic relationships. CT scans of the temporomandibular joint provide a significant advancement in the research of the morphology of these joint structures and the diagnosis of pathologies that are difficult to identify using conventional radiographs. CT scans are the method of choice for obtaining images of bone structures. Also, CT scans enable researchers to make real and precise measurements of structures such as the temporomandibular joint. Because the most traditional CT scanners are large and expensive systems, they have not been used very much by orthodontists. However, the advent of cone beam computed tomography has made these examinations more accessible to orthodontists because of the more compact nature of this equipment, which is more affordable and requires less radiation than conventional CT scans. If you were to take advantage of cone beam computed tomography to precisely measure the position of the mandibular condyle in a sample of non-symptomatic patients with class 1 occlusions, what would you expect to see? This is exactly what was done in a study titled Temporomandibular Joint and Normal Occlusion, Is There Anything Singular About It? A Computed Tomography Evaluation by Robert Willer Farnazzo Vitral et al., which appeared in the July 2011 issue of the American Journal of Orthodontics and Dentofacial Orthopedics. In this study, the authors evaluated 30 persons with normal occlusion ranging in age from 15 to 32 who had CT scans of their TMJs. The participants all had their permanent teeth erupted except third molars, no functional mandibular deviations, no evidence of facial asymmetry, first molars and canines in class 1 relationship, canine guidance with no working or non-working side interferences on lateral excursions, anterior guidance with no posterior interferences, normal overbite and overjet, and no crossbite. When the authors precisely measured the relationship of the mandibular condyles to the fossa in these patients, what do you think they found? The bottom line is they found no singular characteristic of the TMJs of the normal occlusion group. The largest mediolateral diameter of the mandibular condyle process and the posterior joint spaces showed a statistically significant difference between the right and the left sides. They also found a non-centralized position of the condyles, with the condyles anteriorly positioned. I must say that the results of this study did not surprise me. I think as orthodontists, we have been taught for a long time to treat to ideal numbers and relationships, and have failed to fully appreciate that in most of the things that we deal with, there is a wide range of normal variation, and fortunately, nature in most instances appears to be able to adapt to this variation. What surprises me after seeing the results of this study and others is that there are still practitioners trying to jam the mandibular condyle upward and backward to some ideal position. Rather than worry about some theoretical ideal position of the mandibular condyle, I believe it is much more important to evaluate the patient's symptoms. And, as Dr. Fletcher points out in his guest lecture in this month's program, even if some symptoms are present, they should be treated very conservatively, giving nature a chance to correct things without intervention. One other area that I would like to comment on is the philosophy of some orthodontists that it is necessary to use articulator-mounted models to avoid missing a large functional shift, or what has been commonly referred to as a Sunday bite. I think it is important to understand that any articulator can only mount models in the position in which you put the mandible, and if you can't detect a functional shift clinically, the articulator is not going to do it for you. You can find this article in the July 2011 issue of the American Journal of Orthodontics and Dentofacial Orthopedics.